Crikey. So welcome once again to BakudaCast. We're here with special guests Jack, and as well as our regular co-hosts Gav and Craig, to talk through their recent adventures in the world of Bushido and all the things that have been happening recently. So both Craig and Jack have just gone to the UK's UK Expo to attend the Grand Masters up there. So yeah, would you like to tell us a little bit about your list and your games?
Before we do, I think you forgot to introduce yourself. Nobody knows. You know, people think you're Craig and all of that. So this is Darren.
Oh, well, I guess because I got cut out of one episode due to editing difficulties, I think people know who I am. This is a pretty strong brand.
I don't know. There's a lot of gossip out there, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. There's rumours.
Mind you, I think you need to go to an event, Darren, to show that you actually
exist. Come on, we're 5 seconds in, we're already off on a tangent, right? Back to the question.
Yep, to go to an event. So the thing is, we want to talk about the list and just how the day went, really.
Okay. Should we start with Craig or me?
Who wants to go first?
You go, Jack.
I'd really like to hear from Jack because he's my favourite.
Yeah, he's my favourite as well.
So the Masters was a bit of an experience and an experiment for me this year. So I don't know if you're not following Discord or anything like that. I think it was like Wednesday or Thursday before the event. There were still no Jung Pirate players signed up to the event. Whether it was foolish or wise, decided to take a completely random Jung list that I've never played before.
There's no question there, Jack. It was foolish.
Yeah, it was kind of daft. It did feel a bit strange. And, a lot of people, they didn't slate the list. They just were a bit concerned about areas of the list in the sense of what would it do against certain matchups. And from a player that's never played with Jung, and I think I've played into Jung once, it's a faction that I don't really know a great deal about. And I tend to play ninjas, as most people know, and I play with 4 models. So essentially I jumped from 4 models to 9 models, and it was a bit like, wow, what have I got to do with all these activations? But it was really good. So, yeah.
So you were spoiled. Yeah.
I was spoiled for choice. But it has really made me think about how I approach lists moving forward. So, it was really good, really interesting. So to start at the top, I took 2 lots of bounty. 1 model could take Kamikaze and Year of the Rising Sun. Then
can we just very, very quickly say bounty does what?
So bounty after deployment, I get to allocate a death sentence to an enemy unique model.
Mm-hmm. So you can allocate out 2.
Yes, yeah, such a good card.
Yeah, so I could give out 2 death sentence markers. So I can talk more about why I did that. I'll go through the rest of this and I'll go through why I took those events.
Just as you list the card, just a quick synopsis of what the card does.
So Kamikaze is the 1-inch place in the start phase, not in an enemy zone of control. And Year of the Rising Sun gives everybody, both myself and my opponent, 1 extra key. Then I went with Arta, so one of the Tenrai Shark, the Tiger Shark, I believe he is. Or is he the Hammerhead? Hammerhead.
He's the Hammerhead.
See, this is how much I know Jung. I'm just guessing.
Hammerhead because his head looks like a hammer.
Yes. then I took the crabs of the Eastern Sea. So I took the Itsiro crab swarm with a knife because every crab needs to carry a knife.
Just for the meme.
Just for the meme.
Yeah. And it's just 1 knife for the whole swarm as well, right?
Yeah. But it's just such a good tool to have, and I set myself little individual targets. I wanted to win 1 game and kill 1 model with a crab, and I achieved that, but it was really good. Then I took Hitokochi, the big great white shark.
Hitokochi. Yeah.
With Vial of Reagent's Breath. Jobbing with some...
Vial of Reagent's Breath does what?
So Vile Rager's Breath gives him a plus two move and Cloud Walk, effectively. It's one key. Once you've done it, it's done and dusted. Jobbing with Silver Bullets. Silver Bullets makes his gun fire bleed, give bleed when he does damage. And then I took two Kohanin, so the cheap three melee dudes, and one of them had a hand cannon. Again, just a pistol. Mm-hmm. Took Show. And then I took two Kami of the Morning Dew, so two of the Water Kami, and I played that all under the Queen of the Waves. So Queen of the Waves basically gives me a one-inch place at the start of the turn, mm-hmm. Which is not restricted, like Kamikaze, so you can be in base-to-base with models and place away or whatnot. And two models can start the game in flank, which was quite important to the whole of my gameplay, really. So that was really good. So just going back to Bounty, I debated in the 2 days whether I took a blow man down, which basically gets me to, you know, my opponent has to take a, I think it's a key test or a size test.
Size test.
And if they fade it, they move 3 inches and become prone. So it's quite a good card to have. But I think at that point there was a lot of talk about Kinshi Temple, and I was quite nervous because obviously I've not read up much about them, and the only thing I did know is they can't remove death sentence.
Yeah, that's when that bounty becomes amazing. I've used it on like the bear and the two-headed snake, and they both can't remove it either, and it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought it'd be really handy for those. It's just because I know there's two key model for Kinshi that needs to die as soon as possible. So it's for me, it was why I lent towards that way. And it was quite an interesting one because I paired it up with Year of the Rising Sun. So a lot of models outside of the Kinshi could pretty much get rid of Bounty turn one anyway. But it did force them to spend a lot of key, which did become important throughout the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so, it has an impact. I mean, spending, because I mean, certainly when I'm thinking tournament lists, you're optimizing your kind of your machine. So you've got a plan for pretty much all the key you're generating. And, you know, if you take some of that away, it can really scupper certain machines, you know?
Yeah, it does. And
good.
I misplayed it once and it was the game at the end and I lost, but I don't think it would have affected the outcome. It would have just delayed what was going to happen. So I just put it on the two wrong models, who basically kept it and didn't worry about it because they didn't need to worry about having it on them. So yeah, we'll go through
and
we'll get
to it. I would expect better from somebody who's playing, you know, strong in their first tournament, having never used them before. Mistakes? What are you talking about, man?
No, but yeah, it was a really good list. It was really enjoyable. And like I said, it has really made me think about how important activations are. Because, you know, like I said, I've gone from playing a four model ninja list, which, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to stop playing ninjas now because of it. But yeah, I really just enjoyed that freedom of having models, and, you know, the two models going in flank, which we know, surprise for anybody that know Jung, it was my sharks most of the time, because they're the most vulnerable models on the board, in theory. And it still left me seven models on the board. That was the same as some other factions. You know, I played a model, I think that had five models starting, so I still had more activations than somebody else, and I had two more models elsewhere. It was just bonkers. It was really good. It was quite interesting with the new corner edge, Andy was trialing and testing like a different corner edge and made lots of the scenarios corner edge. So for spacing wise, you know, you had some that were quite far away from like zones and objectives, but yeah, no, it was really enjoyable, and I really enjoyed the list. So to no surprise, I've pretty much purchased most of that list now. I think I just need to get another Kohan in.
Good stuff. So we need to give a massive shout out, don't we? An absolutely massive shout out to this guy. I can't believe how generous he was that lent you his models, right?
Yes,
for the weekend. And like, and you know, GCT, like how amazing is this? I'm like a salesman, you know, I lend out models and it translates into sales, you know. I should be getting commission on this stuff. I really should.
I will say I was thoroughly impressed, and I'm actually glad that I stuck to my guns, because the day before the tournament. So you'd packed all the stuff, you dropped it off to Craig's. Andy was like, if you want, you can just take my order for battle list, like a lot I took on the last Masters. It's a tanky list. Nobody can deal with it. It's, you know, it's all these big, heavy, strong hitters. And I was like, now I feel really bad. You know, Gav's gone out of his way. He's put sweets in there for my opponents. The board looks amazing. I said, I'd feel like I was just like taking the mickey. So I was like, no, I'm sticking with my guns. I've got a game plan. You know, we talked about it beforehand. About what sort of what we could do or what's the best way to approach the games. Admittedly, none of it really come off, but I still got to an end result anyway.
I threw some models at you, gave you some bad advice, and sent you on your way.
I can see why your advice would work, but I think once the games were playing out, it was just... I found it really hard. I mean, I don't know if you were going to go over to it, but briefly, the game plan was get bleed out with jobbing and then... you know, let your sharks rampage. But realistically, I was finding that when my sharks were flanking, you know, if I had the first activation, I wanted to be doing something with those sharks to not allow and not allow them to move, to not be surprised. So to me, I thought actually just surprising them was just more important than trying to shoot them first. And a lot of people, I think they kind of expected me to try and shoot them anyway, because they were trying to keep all their models in cover from jobbing anyway. He pretty much just become an objective runner for most of the games. I think he got two shots off. They were very powerful two shots, but he got two shots off throughout my whole tournament. The rest of the time he was just negated.
But I guess he had quite a big impact on slowing the enemy down, I imagine, by having to hop between bits of cover.
Yeah.
And that is the beauty of Jung, isn't it? That the models are, even the basic ones, they're pretty good kind of all-rounders, like generic all-rounders.
Yeah, like,
so, you know, you've got so much flexibility to
the Cohanian and the show are just nuts. For the rice cost for them, I think the three models cost you, what, 8, 16, 24 rice, is it, or something like that? Mm-hmm. Or 25 rice? And they're just three guys that are melee three. Do they do a lot? They just need to defend. They just need to stay alive. They don't need to roll an attack, really. I mean, admittedly, there was time where I was, and, you know, the bleed was doing lots of damage. But what an amazing sort of free model. People complain about Shio having two melee dice and this, that, and the other, and Ashigaru with three dice. They're nuts. Three dice is enough. Three dice is more than enough to survive, strip activations, and score points, which is what you need to do, really. You don't need to kill things to win these games. It's fun.
Anyway, so on that note, before we ramble on too much about that's a perfect general overview of the list that you took. Let's go to Craig to stop you getting a horse throat, Jack.
Yes, thank you.
Let's hear about Craig's list and his approach, and then we'll come back and hear about your first game, Jack. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. No worries.
Sweet, Craig. Are you muted or just taking a breath? I'm not sure.
technical problem there. So I decided to go for Shiho. It was probably only a few months before the event, and it was kind of spurred on by I heard basically at the US Grandmasters, people taking Shiho as a faction, but not really including many actual Shiho models. It was largely a run-in affair. And I thought that was a bit of a shame if no one's taken actual Shiho. And it's something that I've noticed at other tournaments as well. They've not been that well represented. And given I kind of wanted a bit of a challenge, I thought, yeah, let's see if I can get them to work competitively. And having played a fair bit of Brotherhood and a little bit of Snacker, it kind of felt right just to do a bit of a deep dive on actual Shiho, as I was painting them up as well at the time. So it kind of spurred me on to get my painting done. So that's the context anyway. And I did have a bit of a design constraint from the start, because I knew I wanted to play Guerrilla Warfare and I wanted to include as many Shiho models as possible And not because I don't like the run-in, it's just I think there's a lot of synergies when you take the actual faction models, and I wanted to really lean into that. So I
think it's a good place though to be at the start of a, when you think about all the factions that you own, to actually have a clear idea of what you want your list to actually include is very handy, because otherwise you just have analysis paralysis of like all the different options and what might be the best. Yeah. You know, it's nice to have a clear vision.
Yeah, yeah. I know Adam's mentioned a few times, like design, like having constraints is kind of where you get more innovative, I think, or something like that. There's some saying in that sense. So my list had a rice bale barricade, which is a piece of scenery that most people are quite familiar with.
Very, very good piece of scenery, yeah.
Yep. Two Haymen, which are just very cheap, quite flexible models, a little Yari man with Vection of Sagoya that basically gives bodyguard and can be for Lul and Samurai, so quite a good range and 3 inches, so it's a pretty good version of bodyguard. Shiho Hiroto, he's got Finesse and Vala Rajan's Breath, so the Vala again is +2 move, cloud walk, key feat for one. And Finesse, you don't get brutal against him, which is good. Just makes him even more tanky. Shiho Kita and Shiho Mizaki, Shiho Sayaka and Shiho Wimpy, they're all samurai. So for the Shiho samurai, in the theme of guerrilla warfare, like I mentioned. And that was...
What's the kind of key points of those samurai? Because I'm actually not very familiar with them. Like what are they, bow armed or swords or anything particular?
So Kita is kind of like a support samurai. He gives out virtue tokens, and I guess he's got a few more tricks. Misaki is a kind of, she's got a bow, but she's sort of one of those kind of combat models with a bow, I suppose. She's not amazing, but she does have a lot of options, so she's a good toolkit model, I'd say. Shiho Sayaka is a really interesting samurai, very cheap. It's pretty good in the fight, actually. Can hit really hard if she's got enough ki to boost, because she could do a nice powerful attack. And she can also support other samurai by effectively kind of giving like a... an inspiration, extra dice for melee or range. And Wimpy, he's a little bit more developed, I suppose. He's got a 1-inch start turn placement, which is pretty special. And he can be fairly tanky, but he can boost up to be fairly good on the offensive as well. So a good all-round model.
Cool. Craig, you mentioned virtue tokens. Somebody generates and hands out virtue tokens. What virtue effects do you have in the list that you can use those on?
Yeah, so Kita hands them out, and you can just start. Well, during his activation, he'd give one out within 6 inches. So often he'll start on the table for me just to make sure we can make the most of that. You can do a 1-inch walk. You can move out of base to base and zone of control of an enemy model, which is the big one, really, because then you can kind of get out of combat.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty huge. You can also give out dodge 1 and range defense 1 as well. So if you do want to make someone a bit more survivable, that's good. And can give out endurance as well. So quite a nice range of things you could do there. And whenever someone else spends a virtue token, he can make a 1-inch walk. So he becomes pretty good at getting to defend your scenarios or your objectives, or get to the enemy objectives. Just with those little extra walks and placement effects can really add up. I found it to be pretty effective.
For listeners that are new to the game, I think, you know, understanding the virtue mechanics and that kind of extra layer of interaction was one of the last things that I kind of really understood when I was learning the basics of the game. And it is really important, and certainly like in my favorite list, the Rokan peasants, you know, the bulls are giving out virtues, and it's the virtue effects that make them really powerful. So it's worth reading up on if you don't really sort of get, you know, some different lists that use virtue mechanics.
He's a good example because he's virtues, they can only be used by friendly law models. So it's a good example of where sticking in theme with actual sort of law Shiho models, you get more synergies out of that. So, and that is a bit of the trick with these virtue tokens. They're normally quite specific in who can use them.
Absolutely. And it's really, really important in list building to understand all of your virtue synergies. And I love that about list building, that actually putting different models with different effects into the list can actually just build flexibility into the virtues that you're generating, you know, all those little things to think about, Race. So great, thanks Craig. We do need to hear from you about how much practice you got in with your list beforehand. We know that Jack was a complete Jung virgin.
Yeah, well, you actually,
touched by a crab for the very first time.
Jack, we had a game, didn't we?
The week before. Two games the week before, which kind of put the nail in the coffin for not. But it's so because I'm focused on that, my own ninja list hasn't really done anything. I've not looked at it. We had a little local event not so long ago, and I took like a whole North Star themed list in the scouting mission, and it went horribly wrong. I think I lost like 3-0, 3-0, and 2-1 or something stupid like that. So it was like my ninja lists have been lacking.
I'm glad I didn't do the introduction because I was gonna make this really bad pun about like this golf pun with your surname that you're Mr. Consistently like excellent, but just never on the podium, right?
Using
the name, you know.
That could be a thing.
It's par for those people like who don't know.
Yeah.
There's the joke. Par. There we go. See, I got it in, and I also managed to kind of save a little bit of face that, you know.
No, but I know it's one of those things. But then it happened before the last Masters. I think I come and played you, and you completely and utterly annihilated my list 3-0, like the week before. And then I went to the Masters and would come fourth in that one as well. So it was like, it's just. Yeah, maybe I just lose before I win, or I focus more because I'm playing casually and I'm at an event, so I focus more. Maybe I don't know.
I think in your practice games, it's very acceptable to lose a lot of them because you're just trying out new things, because that stress testing means that when you go to a tournament, hopefully you've learned stuff from that.
Suffer from the phenomenon. I don't know. I lose every game I play against Craig. And then every time we go to a tournament together, I finish much higher than he does every time. You know, that's the so I don't know why that happens, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just good practice. We'll get you ready for getting you in shape.
I think that's what it is. Yeah, you're just such a good Mokujin.
The Craig
onto games, aren't we? Yeah. So Jack, yeah, your first was.
So my played against a Shio list. In my first game, and I think it's, I can't pronounce it, is it Amaju? Amaji?
Amaju?
It's a three idol one, which
The scenario, right?
Yeah, scenario, Amaju. Okay. Actually, his list is very much what Craig described as what he was trying to avoid. So it was, off the top of my head, it was Tenbetsu, Grey Pilgrim, Tenchi. I think then Sayaka and one other, maybe two other models. Oh yeah, one of the Golden Sentinels and Yuki, the 11 Rice bow person from Shiho. Only two Shiho models in
and the rest running. Wow.
The rest running. Fairly nervous about this one. Well, one, because I've never played this opponent before, and two, first proper tournament game with Chung, and I know he had Tenbetsu, which is going to be a major problem, and Grey Pilgrim is also a major problem for most people. So, yeah, I was a bit worried about that. It went really well. Highlights for me really was the Shark, my big Shark, flanked on. Because obviously I lost the deployment, so I had to deploy my Sharks in flank. So just a current theme, so I'll make everybody aware of it. So turn two, my big Shark was coming in every game. And turn three, the cheap Hammerhead Shark was coming in.
What was your thinking behind that
bag? One, I didn't want to be hampered by Arta's Impetuous. If I wanted to go first with the big Shark, then I wanted him to go first. So the Impetuous kind of made me want him to go second. And also it meant he can come on fully keyed up. So in theory, he could come in. He could move boost if he needed to. I think not move boost, sorry. He could melee boost and do the...
Thrash or something.
He's like got hammerhead, is it Hammer Time or something like that? Or Hammer...
it's like Hammerhead Strike or something like that. It's pretty good.
It's like Hammerhead Strike. Basically, it's the unblockable one. So I wanted him to be able to come on and impact, you know, pretty much just go in and kill whatever.
Come on, I can't believe that we were faffing around about that. Nobody's got the app open or the card.
It's Hammer Strike. I've got it.
Hammer Strike.
Yeah. There we go.
Hammer Strike. To be fair, I went into my the app, and I did get my list already in the favourites, but I just haven't.
I was just, you know, reflecting on how professional we look. It's amazing.
I think it's perfectly reasonable to call it Hammer Time. That was perfectly reasonable. Yeah. Hammer Time was going to happen.
So that was my sort of thought process. The big Shark was always a big threat, and it was actually quite interesting because in Discord, in the leading days, everybody was talking about flank. And everybody was talking about how, everybody's flanks turn two anyway. But actually, I wanted to prove to myself, and it was the same thing. So turn two, one Shark would turn up. They're like, right, is the other Shark not coming on? I'm like, nope. So they're now having to worry about, so where's this third Shark? Where's the second Shark coming on and when? So it made people had to try and be a little bit defensive, not leave their rear arc to the sides. So if they want to start praying or anything like that and start, facing idols, it would be really hard. But yeah, so anyway.
So I think just to interject that, like, you know, and I don't want everybody to think I've got a man crush on you or anything. But this is kind of this is the kind of thinking about, you know, the mind games and like, you know, that extra kind of meta level of you know the game. That means that it shows you're a good player, right? That you know, able to take that list and really understand what makes it tick, even before kind of
I looked at the synergies, and
that's impressive. I'm just really impressed by that.
I'm going to start coughing now.
You're getting choked up. My sweet words of home.
Yeah, exactly. It's all too emotional.
I do appreciate that. It's. I never took it, and I still don't feel. It sounds daft. I still don't feel like some of these elite players.
I never suggested you're elite, Jack. Come on, don't get ahead of yourself.
I don't even put myself up there as some of the good players because you know
Good. You're good, definitely. Yeah.
I don't know if I just turn up at a tournament. That's what it is. I'm a tournament player. I don't do well casually. Maybe that's why I don't think that I'm good. But it's one of those things that I just looked at it, and it just made sense to me. They just felt like big distraction pieces. And if people had to worry about them, they're not going to be worrying about my cheap chaff that's actually made my way up the board and doing what I need them to do. And that was kind of what happened with this. Like the first game, my big Shark come in right by Tenbetsu. I didn't expect Tenbetsu to be there because, I deployed first. So I had to nominate where I was coming on before he deployed. Most funniest thing about that game was my Shark spent two turns. Well, the first turn we come on, just Vial of Rage. But so he brung Tenbetsu like within an inch of me. And I thought, yeah, I ain't brawling with this guy. So I just Vial of Rage and Breath and just ran straight over him, ran past him. Like, yeah, I'm not fighting. So my big, scary, great white kind of
like actually... goes ethereal ghost shark and just like,
yeah, and just sauces off. He was like, I'm not dealing with this, which was really funny. And ironic, really, because he's an aggressive, big, great white, and he's running away. But actually, in my positioning, I actually left myself within like 3 inches of his grey pilgrim, who was currently being held by Watercammy. So, yeah, that didn't go too well for him.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was one of those things. And with all due, like, my opponent, I felt really bad for him. He had some really bad dice. He got a 3 dice, short range shot off into the shark, rolled triple ones. That was one key thing. When my shark went into attack Grey Pilgrim, he had 1 dice, no, 2 dice, rolled a 2 and a 1 in defense. And it was like, yeah, my great white just went yump and she was gone. So, yeah, there was really...
And a bit of luck at the right time can be, you know, the difference.
Yeah, and that is a part of this game. I mean, the second game didn't go too well. We'll go into that. But, like, yeah, it's he stayed alive a lot longer than he was expected to in that game. He actually finished the game alive. And I was actually really close to, you know, drawing because I nearly killed all of his models. Which was like, right. Oh, no, I stopped. You know, I saw red. I saw blood, you know, the whole...
Yeah, based on that to me, lost the game by killing all my models.
Yeah.
That's what I played for, absolutely.
So I was quite... It was quite a good game. You know, Watercammy really surprised me. You know, first time properly seeing them on the table and them just literally immobilising and holding people was bonkers.
Yeah, they're good.
They are
so what was the final result of that game, Jack?
So, in the end, I won 2-0. So, the first one, he played really clever. I managed to get 2 idols turn. He then turned the middle one back to neutral and was able to protect it to stop me from, you know, getting enough models into it. Because, obviously, he flanked his 2 Shio guys into the one that I had already controlled. But I just didn't have enough... Sorry, I didn't have enough non-insignificant models, so I didn't have enough, like...
objective.
Yeah, people to go on it. So my objective people were kind of around my idol. So by the time I got there with, like, zones of controls and stuff, I wouldn't have been able to turn the middle one. So I lost the first VP. But by the last game, he literally had... 1 Golden Sentinel left. I killed everything else. This is the one game that Jobbin got a good shot off in Tembetsu with his Pierce, and he literally left Tembetsu on 1 health from 1 short-range
very
shot.
Nice. Very
with
nice.
The Death lead one, he just... Yeah, it was kind of... Well, actually, no.
When he hits, Jobbin.
Yeah, when he hits, he did really
full
hit.
Full strength, yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. So that was really interesting. So it was a good game. I won 2-0.
Nice.
That was the start for me.
Must have left you feeling a little bit, you know, buoyant going into the next game, like, you know, or at least slightly more relaxed.
I lost myself because it confirmed in my head the list kind of worked and my game plan, you know, to kill things was working well. I also learned that sharks don't have to come on an attack. So the running theme for me was Arta didn't actually kill much. He ended up just scoring points because he was coming on impetuous, running onto zones or running into idols and praying and stuff like that. So, because that's one thing that they can do. They can't wait, but they can pray.
They can
do scenario actions, which is really interesting. So, it was really good. And like I said, for me, I just set myself a target. You know, I'm here to have fun with it now. Win one game, kill something with a crab. I hadn't killed anything with a crab by this point, but I'd won a game. So if I go and lose the rest of them, it doesn't matter. I've done what I needed to do. It was fun.
Yeah. So you've set yourself up psychologically too for, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, performing the rest of the tournament.
Well, exactly that. I was there to have fun. And realistically, if I'd won the event, I'd have had no idea what sort of model to create. I was there to have fun with a new list and a new faction.
I'd have just done you as a pirate. You kind of look a little bit piratey.
Yeah, there's lots of jokes on the Discord about doing like a ninja pirate.
Captain Parr.
Okay, ninja pirate sounds all right.
Ninja pirate, Captain Parr would be amazing.
Yeah, exactly that. it was a good first game. It was a good confidence boost, nice. And it set me up for the rest of the day, really. So.
Sweet. Right. Craig, you've been very quiet in the corner over there.
Yeah.
So you're playing a game against yourself again, aren't you? While we're talking in the background,
doing a bit.
Just can't stop, can you?
Just got to get the reps in, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, right. Tell us about your first game, mate.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to say, the day before I actually did play with my Wolves, Tanaka, and had a pretty good game. And I almost actually decided to go for the Wolves and do a last minute thing, but thankfully I stuck with Chiho, stuck to the plan, because that's always the best.
As we say, you didn't pull a jack.
No. That would have been a really 11th hour, yeah. So, yeah, I played into Dissension. It was kind of a Bazembo centered list. Sojobo was also in there. So
Bazembo is he's the heavy archer.
He's the Tengu with a massive bow. Which I always find quite tricky because a lot of factions don't particularly enjoy getting shot at all day, and I found Shiho don't enjoy it. So
Sojobo as well, who's the fallen Tengu king.
He is, yeah. He's just a very good defensive model, and he can make the range game pretty much impossible into him. So, I got a 1-1 draw out of that. So it was a pretty tight game. It was just a kind of very intricate game fighting over those midline objectives. And
two quite mobile lists, really. So you're both playing. I can imagine that being quite technical.
Yes, there was lots of kind of very kind of micro management of arcs and movement and stuff like that. Yeah. Got quite chessy.
That's what you want for your first game of a tournament.
Yeah.
To warm up the old, you know.
Yeah.
To activate those almonds.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a good result against a good player. So I was pleased with that. I didn't manage to take out Bazembo, unfortunately, with Hirota, and I think that was why I was struggling to get a clear advantage on the table. And normally when you're playing...
Flanking with Hirota?
Yeah, flanking booted to get to Bazembo, yes. So that all went to plan, but he just didn't land the killing blow on him. But that's fair enough. He's not always going to do it. And it became a challenging game of movement, really, and just fighting over the objectives. But I thought I probably should have been able to win the brawl, but he actually had quite a few Tengu who are quite good defensive models, so it was not that easy actually to get a clear table advantage. And that was good in a way, because it really just kept the game kind of competitive, and it was really, really good fun game. And
sounds like a really entertaining game, but the one that you would really love to spend 4 hours and maybe half a bottle of whiskey over, you know.
Absolutely.
Any other sort of key learnings from that, or we'll move on to game two? So you got a 1-1 draw with that one, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you know where you guys were in the table at this point? Can you remember?
I was mid table, sort of. So I know quite a few people had won 3-0 at that point. So I think I was in the top 10, but I wasn't. I can't remember exactly where I was.
How many players were there at this event then?
32,
oh, wasn't it? Okay.
Yeah, it's all on Longshanks now, so you can kind of see your stats throughout the day.
Yeah, so that's worth mentioning. I was away camping that weekend, which is why I couldn't make it. But whenever I could get signal, I was logging into Longshanks and following the results as they were being posted. And I, can't recommend it more highly for just keeping track of stuff that was going on in real time.
It's a really good tool. I know there's a few people that still were a bit and about it because, is it going to make Bushido a more stat-driven game? But this is probably going off topic. But it is a really good tool for not just for, for like you said, but for TOs, it's really good. But yeah, for the meta, they can actually, we've got quite an international following. So they can all, keep up to date with what's happening at these sort of events, because, it's important.
And I mean, it's just multifaceted, isn't it? So even with all the stat stuff aside, okay. I mean, I think data, for me, the more data, the better, right? What you do with the data is the important thing. But just as a kind of social tool, and the fact that it enabled me to connect to you guys who were playing in the tournament,
yeah,
that I couldn't make was just really valuable, right? Take what you can get out of it, and I got a lot out of it. So
it was really good.
Yeah. So game number two then.
Game two. Yes, if I remember rightly, you should have it there in front of you, Craig, but I think it was Depletion, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah, Depletion.
Quick explanation of that for
It's the six scenario objectives. Craig, you'd have to confirm, was it scoring 2, 4, and 6, or was this different to the app?
Yes, scoring 2, 4, and 6, 5 prayer, simple, fix 6 turns, and like I said, 6 objectives, 2 friendly, 2 neutral, 2 enemy, decrease in popular.
Okay. We won't explain all those terms because it's complicated. You can look all of those up.
Yeah. I mean, the main thing to note with that is the decrease in popular. The rest of it we won't go over, but decrease in popular is basically so once the VP is scored, the most popular idol, so the idol that's had the most prayers basically, is removed from play. So it's, you know, it stops that you just sitting on a set idol and praying on it, because once it's scored,
it's anti-camping, right?
It keeps the game moving.
Depletion is unusual because it's got no reset. The decrease in popular is the mechanic to kind of try and balance it. And it is interesting because if you score quite big on the enemy objectives, then that's great, but then you lose them and then it's hard to score later game and stuff. So there's a lot of maths kind of and thinking to make sure pace yourself.
Can I just check? So there's no reset and pacifism. Does that come into play with this?
Yeah, pacifism comes back massively.
That's really powerful in this scenario, right?
Yeah. And that was my big worry because my opponent had pacifism. So it was kind of a matchup that I was not dreading, but it was one that was questioned. Like, I can't remember who asked me, but like they said, what are you going to do against Minamoto? I was like, I've got no idea. I've got a big gun that will break through the armor, but other than that, I've got no idea. But in hindsight, as it showed, I think it didn't matter because I had so many more models. They had pacifism.
So what was the list you played into then? Game two?
I played into a Minamoto list, Finest Steel. If I remember Tom Head, it was Minamoto Yuji, the big 20 rice samurai, Minamoto Nico, Minamoto Ryo. Kayaja, I can't pronounce it, I don't know if that's the right one, the 9 rice blacksmith, a fire kami, and the Narm, the 16 rice blacksmith.
Right. Sounds similar, at least half the list, those samurai that you talked about, to the one that won the last tournament I went to, which was down your way, Jack.
Yes, very similar. I think he played slightly different. So he played all the big boys. I think that guy did.
Was it the last Masters, actually?
The last Masters one was won by Minamoto.
Which was similar to that, right? How did it differ?
Fairly similar, yes. But I think they had, it was, I think he had a Grey Pilgrim in there. He was playing Order for Battle with a Grey Pilgrim, whereas this was playing straight up Finest Steel. It was quite an interesting list. And I'll be honest with you, this is the game where the Water Kami come into their own. So my opponent pretty much, again, as I said, my Sharks flanked turn 2 and 3, Big Shark 2, Little Shark 3. It was the only game where I sort of considered whether I did it both turn 2, because it was scoring turn 2. I wanted to know, give me the extra ability. Or the extra activation to try and score, especially with pacifism on the board. But luckily, I was able to brought Minamoto Yuji up in a point. So my first turn, my Water Kami ran. Start of second turn, my Water Kami charged Yuji. And really, again, one of the dice were really lucky. I obviously run my one in attack, one in defense. I got a six on both dice, and I literally stop it. So I then held and immobilized Yuji. I think it was for three turns, and that was pacifism pops turn two. But hard. But this game, the key point for me was I lost my big shark turn two to a fire cami.
Lost him turn two. Wow. So he came on.
He come on turn two.
Yeah.
But it was more important for me to get my water cami into the Yuji because I didn't want Yuji to start coming hitting me. So that was more
that charge first before you activated.
Before I activated the shark because I completely forgot the fire cami is like a stupidly long charge threat and cloud walk. So it then come into me. Obviously I'm aggressive, so it managed to do some ridiculous amount of damage.
So what dice did you put in? So you would have had three dice, right? Did he surprise you or anything like that?
No. So it was three dice. So it had to be, I just did two in attack, one
so
in defense.
So you just had one in defense, yeah.
One in defense. So
two did, attack, one did defense. The fire cami go all out attack, I assume?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, right. All out attack. So, which was quite clever and probably what helped to kill it at the end of that turn because it effectively, it did something like four or five damage. It might have been six damage on its attack. Because my defense was only like a three or something like that. He rolled like a six or a seven, so quite a good attack. And then because obviously I was aggressive, nothing in defense, I did the one damage back and got a fire two marker.
A victim of your own success.
Exactly that. And then because it was in base to base, I know, and I'm not agile, you know, I had to hit it again. So I hit it. It rolled everything into attack. I then killed it. Because obviously I did the two attack, one defense. But obviously on attack, I think it did enough damage. And I literally had two health left. And I had two fire two markers on me. So he died in the end phase of turn two.
I mean, that was a quite good move by your opponent.
Yeah, it was clever play. It was really clever play.
Almost as clever as that time I just painted up Pitakute, the same model that you used on the day. Just painted him up freshly, got him on the table. And I played into Craig's, was it a Yuta list? I think.
It's an Ito, and it, isn't and it?
He, might have been Ito, yeah. He played a gotcha on me and used Sacrifice without kind of saying, oh, yeah, you know, I've got the potential for Sacrifice here.
So I you told might you not want to like,
go into this witch. And so, yeah, Hitakuchi basically ate massive damage on the witch, but then he sacrificed the model to... do no damage, and I was counting on the doing some damage and then buying loads of extra activations because I'd pumped him full of key.
Yeah.
And his witch went all out attack, knowing that she couldn't be hurt, and did like most of the wounds on his, like took him down to two wounds or something. For nothing.
That's skin use.
Most embarrassing thing ever. Yeah. And disappointing.
It was really clever play, and I was actually quite nervous. I was like, how do I catch up? Like, what do I do here? You know, I've just lost my big beater into a big beaty list. I was able to get a couple of prayers off to then go 4-2 or in the prayers. So I then scored the first VP turn two. And then my other water kami turn three managed to lock up Ryu, I think it is, the immovable one, the one that's got like the sitting down pose, immovable one. Held him, or my water kami held him for two turns, I think it was. But literally it was just I was able to pray at such a rate that I couldn't catch up. So going into the final turns of the game, I think I was up 13 scenario points to two. She had all her models. She had the big, I didn't kill any of the big samurai. They all stayed alive. I just held two of them for a game. And then I was just throwing in my crabs. My crabs going into Niku was just genius because it was like, I'm just going to come in, sit here, roll everything in defense because he'd come into me. And obviously I took the crab that was tireless, fearless and, you know, durable.
Yeah.
And everything going to it. So, it didn't bother me. So I was like, roll three dice in defense.
Yeah, really showing the sort of flexibility. You know, you look at the list and you think it's just about heavy hitters and eating stuff, but actually it's got lot more to it. To lock stuff down and
play, and that's it. And that was the clever bit because,
like I said, the sharks were just a massive distraction. Actually, the main bit of my work was with the 7 models that started on the board.
Bang on.
Having the right amount of models to strip activations and, you know, just really annoy people. One thing I didn't mention, actually, this game, I put my death sentence on Yuji and Narn, the other fire throwing
blacksmith.
Yeah.
Interesting. So did that burn their key or did it help him?
It burned the key for Yuji. She used that straight away, started the game. So Yuji started with Narn. She left it on Narn, which I think was what probably caused him to die towards the end because the crab did go in on him.
Crab with a knife, attack and a death sentence.
Yeah. The crab didn't actually kill him, but it left him on enough wounds that Sho could then come and finish him off.
Hitman crab for hire.
Yeah, exactly. Most crab with a knife.
He's got a death sentence. Like, what? How would you mark the person that a crab's been identified? Is it like pheromones or something?
Yeah, no, it was really good. But yeah, it was a good game. And like I said, as I alluded to, my scenario points were just so far in front. I ended up winning 3-0.
That was a 3-0 win. Brilliant.
Nice. Yeah, and it was one of those ones where I think the scenario played in my advantage because I had so many models that I could strip activations and stop them from praying. So, yeah.
Brilliant.
So, Craig, do you want to talk to us about your second game?
Yeah, sure. It was against Kinchi Temple, and it went really well. So, I managed to take out a few key pieces early game with Hiroto. That kind of set me up really.
Craig, the important thing to note here is that you'd played a good few games with Kinchi. Like you picked them up on release, didn't you?
And yeah, Craig, I've not had...
You'd at least played enough games to understand
how they work. Yeah, we did...
That was important.
We did the episode as well, yeah. So I knew that going for Q was sort of first priority. So Hiroto went in and managed to get his critical attack off there, if I remember correctly. I was able to get to his back line fairly quickly and then just got a lot of early prayers in. So I was able to kind of max out on prayers basically. And I think something like turn 3, I think I had all 5 prayers on the back line. So,
right. So was this a Kinchi list with so did it have multiple teleport points and was it zipping around all over the place
so it had all that. Master Shi was in there as well, so he had Q and Master Shi, so that's kind of the two big characters, if you like. It's only expensive characters, so it's a bit different to how I play them. He had Batsu in there. He had the 2 Husk, if I remember correctly. And again, that's why kind of chatting to Jason about how to deal with the Husk, knowing like you don't kill one, you do deal with the other, was pretty helpful to sort of manage them. Because if you make a mistake against these guys, you'll definitely feel it.
I think I taught you that, didn't I, Craig? Don't attack one Husk. I just annoyed you the first time you put that husk on the table and wanted me to kill it.
You just wouldn't, yeah.
I could feel your anger.
Well, rising, I wanted Kodai to come out onto the table. That's all.
Yeah, it is. And I stopped. And I didn't let you have your fun, did
yeah,
I?
Yeah, I still haven't had him out. I'm going to have to pay
for what you did to Hitokichi.
I'm going to have to pay the points for him to get him on the table because no one's taking the bait.
No quarter asked or given, Craig.
And then I think he had a couple of the mid range monks. If I remember correctly, he had the one with the look into the void. No, the void stares back. That's it.
That's really defensive, right? You pop it when you take just before you do the damage roll.
Oh no, this is the the success level 4 damage that hits you. The one you're thinking of is the one that Master she's got. So it went very well. Was able to kind of get the damage in before they got too powerful, and then was able to tie up Master Shi with Hiroto effectively, and then the rest of the list were quite effective at dealing with the monks. I've probably got a bit of advantage in that I played monks so much often now. I think I've got used to kind of, you know, dealing with them because they are good, but if you can get them surprised, you can normally start to do some damage, and then you sort of wear them down eventually. So it was that really. So I played much better game, better focus on scenarios, and actually kind of making sure I did a decent amount of damage. So it was a bit of a runaway in the end, but a really good game. And cool. It's
so what was the score in the end?
3-0. So that was a good win against a faction I was quite worried about, just because I know if they get going, they're very powerful.
Right. Excellent. So in terms of performance, after two games, whereabouts were you on the table? So Jack, where were you?
I think top five, roughly, with a 3-0 and a 2-0 win. So I would have been on a 9, I'd have been on 17 scenario points. So I would have been up near the top.
So very top nice. 5 out of a 32-player tournament with a list you've never used before. Like, you must have been feeling pretty handy at that point, right?
Yeah. I was more nervous about what was to come, but I was feeling good. I'd won two. I was just winning and having fun.
Fantastic. And Craig, you were whereabouts were you?
Don't know. I probably would have been on the somewhere in the middle, or probably at the top end of the middle.
So 12, if that makes sense. 10 to 12, sort of.
Yeah, roughly. I think
you were at top 10 at that point. I mean, I can't remember.
I seem to recollect that you were around about the top 10, around 9 or 10 at that point.
Okay, yeah. So the weird thing is I wasn't really paying too much attention to Longchamp's during the day.
Who cares?
I was just trying to get the games in and go on to the next ones. It's pretty intense.
Oh, so, Eye of the Tiger, right, I get it, yeah.
Yeah, so you were probably better informed than I was, but I was at that point, I was quite happy. I kind of felt like, you know, mission kind of accomplished. Got a decent win against a tough opposition, and kind of, you know, was like we were saying, Jack, so at that point you were sort of, you know, I was kind of relaxed, whatever happens, you know, I've sort of feel like I've done my bit, had some good form, and yeah.
That's after game two. Let's quickly jump into game three then. So Jack.
Game three. So this is a player that I played in the last Masters, interestingly enough. Really nice guy. He was playing Temple. Wasn't quite your peasant list, but it was a load of chaff. So it was a battle of the chaff.
Was it Bastion's theme or something else?
No, it was an Order for Battle theme.
Okay.
But he basically had Koji with three monkeys.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is it Aiko, the little girl?
Yep. Aiko
with a gorilla. Okay. He had the transporting fox lady. Don't know her name.
It'll come to me.
Yeah, the transporting fox lady. And is it Yuki, like the wind one? I can't remember exactly his cards, but yeah, so it was quite a lot of models. So actually, it was he had 8 models, I think, to my 9. And he had a rice bale barricade, and we were playing Bataku, which was his setup. I must admit, was pretty spot on. I really didn't know how I was going to come or how I was going to deal with it. So he basically set the rice bale sort of at my point. He'd done really well setting up his terrain. So I had a really small funnel to get through, and you know, with his scout 4 monkeys, he could just have like little annoying monkeys stopping me from getting into the zone. And I think it was
By the way, just to interject, the fox lady.
Oh,
the
fox lady, yeah.
Yeah.
And he had really clever use with her, to be honest. I've never really seen people use her the way that, I've not seen her that often on the table, but I think that he played her really well. He killed both my sharks with her, but yeah, he did manage to kill both sharks with her.
And it was,
I've never grasped, I've put her on the table a few times,
yeah,
and she's never performed as well as I expected her to. She's always been a bit of a disappointment, so I'm interested to, yeah.
Yeah, no, it went really well. So he stopped me from getting into the zone. I think by turn three, I think he was like 5-0 up, because obviously he'd just been holding. He'd made one prayer, I think, on his one, or he had pacifism something. I can't remember. No, he didn't have, definitely didn't have pacifism, sorry. He prayed on once on his, and he scored the middle twice. So I think he was like 5-0 up, and I just didn't understand how I was going to come back from it. But it was, I managed to kill monkeys. Really,
they're fit. Really hard to kill as well, those monkeys.
Mate, like I said, I'd always said it. I said to him, we started, it's like the battle of the chaff. Whoever chaff is better than the other chaff is just going to win. And it kind of come to it, because I killed his monkeys fairly easily. Annoyingly, I did have to use Jobbin's hibiscus to kill one, because I just couldn't, you know, I missed with something else. So, yeah, that was annoying. A big shark flank turn two. Literally walked in and ate Aiko. Yum. She was good. And then it sort of...
So just to check, was your opponent playing bodyguard with the gorilla, or had the gorilla gone off?
No, the gorilla come off. So what he'd done is he basically brought the gorilla into the centre objective. So where he placed the gorilla was pretty much the gorilla and the 50 mil was pretty much the only thing that could fit in the zone. You couldn't really get anything else fully into that zone.
Okay.
Which was quite...
It was a blocking piece. Yeah, I just wondered whether it was a... You know, sometimes people are... They want to use the mechanic, you know?
Like, yeah,
no. The gorilla's there for the bodyguard, so... Yeah. And that would have been a really cinematic and fun, like, yes, thing to have happened. So.
And it probably would have saved Aiko. You know, there's no two ways about it. She's a one-dice melee model.
Yeah.
A nice three-dice in attack. Yeah, we go. Done.
Yeah. And a gorilla can throw a shark, right?
Yeah, I think so.
There's nothing stopping gorillas throwing sharks.
No, you can throw me and make me prone and just ruin my day. But it was really good. He managed to kill. I think the downside of my sharks and that was the aggressive bit. That was the only time where I felt the aggressive was a negative, because every other game I enjoyed, it didn't really bother me. When he was putting the fox lady into me, because I think she has reach or lightning reflexes or something like that. I'm sure she does. I can't remember. But she always seemed to be fighting first, so she could do damage.
Yeah, I think she's got lightning reflexes.
Yeah, so...
I don't think so.
I thought she had something cool like that.
No, she doesn't. She
might have
it?
Faint.
She does have
faint. Yeah, she has faint. So yeah, she had something that was really annoying, which kept making my dice worse. So it must have been faint.
When you're defensive, faint, actually, that sounds pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Faint and dodge.
Yeah, faint and dodge. So she was literally making full use of it. So she was fainting like my five and sixes in defenses to like twos and threes, and dodging my sixes and sevens, like sixes and attacks down to like twos and threes. It just worked really well for her. So she managed to kill the big shark. And then once my little shark come on, the little and big, it's just easier for me to pronounce them.
It always makes me smile, because it's like, oh, he's not really that little, is he? Baby shark. It's quite intimidating. 40 mil
bank. Quite intimidating, I must admit. But she's really cool. So he could switch into the fox, come and like have the movement to get to my other shark, and then turn back into the fox lady. And yeah, it was just really annoying, because Arta didn't really get to do anything. He just got held up by her for like two turns and then died. And that's the thing. I think that's the big thing with sharks. If they don't kill you quick enough, you will just die, because aggressive will catch up.
But that imagery there epitomizes what I love about Bushido. That it's so cinematic, imagining this fox running around and shape shifting and like, yeah, that I love the game. Great.
You know, it was really good. No, it was really cleverly played. You held them off. Yuki was a pain, but this was the game that not only did my crab kill one model, it killed two.
Right.
He killed the gorilla.
Crab stabbed the gorilla to death.
So basically, God. It was
I had a water cami into the gorilla, who then held and immobilized the gorilla. So it was minus one dice. It was a two dice gorilla against my, and the gorilla was exhausted as well, I think. So it was like down to one dice, my three dice crab, all three in attack. He rolled like a two in defense, and I think I rolled a double six on the damage. He was like, he said, I think it might survive. I was like, let me just look. Yeah, it's like nine damage. I don't think it survives that. And right. It died.
See, and I thought you were winning games. Yeah, you're piloting the list with skill, and you know.
It took some skill to hold.
To roll a double six and murder something.
But yeah, so he did that, and then the crab then managed to go and kill the fox lady, effectively, because the fox lady got into a melee then with Sho, and then started getting some bleed damage on her. And
the fox lady going and murdering, running around, killing stuff, and then the crab gets involved.
Comes in, yeah. Sho set it up nicely. I think the Sho managed to leave the shark, because obviously she'd been hitting the shark, so the sharks had been doing some damage, but like one damage and a bleed or whatever. So she'd been slowly chip damaging herself. She removed two really big pricey models, but she did slowly die herself. And then the crab was just able to just charge in and kill her, because I still had, at that point, he had just Yuki left. And I had seven models apart from the two sharks. So I was able to hit the middle and pray to just overtake on scoring and win that one 3-0.
3-0. Well done. Amazing.
Yes.
Pray. Yeah,
your game three.
I was going into ninjas and it was another chess-like game, very cerebral and very intense, lots of little precise movement positioning throughout the game. I pushed into the zone early on just to really put the pressure on and try to lure the ninjas out a little bit. And that seemed to work quite well, but they were quite keen to just defend their objective and weren't really looking to come from mine. So Hiroto did his thing and went into one ninja and then was able to move into another ninja from there. And he was doing a pretty good job of putting a lot of pressure on their objective. And while that was happening, Wimpy was able to get some prayers in. So I went ahead quite quickly on that, but it was a really tight game, and it all ended up resulting in a 1-0 victory, if I remember correctly. It's a pretty tight game, but yeah, really, really, really well played, and my position was great sportsman, and very sporting, and it's always tough, I think, going into ninjas, so I was relieved to come out with a win.
Yeah, great. Well done. Very well done. So you both very, wins very out in that quick round.
Run through there, Craig. Anything else that you want to go through?
That's pretty much it.
Okay, fair news.
Game four. I'm Mr. Chatterbox. Craig just sits quietly and just goes, yeah, one.
Yeah, Craig's like, yeah. And...
oh, come on. You're just much more interesting.
That's
why I'm letting you run. You know, I'm enraptured. You know, I'm just bored of Craig, I think that's what it is.
Well, no. I don't have crabs running around doing stuff.
How many crabs killed gorillas in your game, Craig? that's the metric now for how exciting a game is.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But yeah, I think
Fox is killing sharks, so you know.
It's a give and take.
You know, Jack's allowing the cinema to develop. You know, it's like a wine. Right? It's just so logical and like this happened and then this happened.
Right, it's really good. So game four for me, continue. Game that I was dreading, Mr. Grandmaster himself.
So it's the list that I'd sort of been worried about. Like, I hadn't really paid attention to it, but I'd heard a few people complain. You know, I know that at least one of his opponents just stopped turn one. Yeah, I'm not playing anymore. It's like, it was that brutal of a list. And admittedly to him, he played it really, really well. It's a really good list. It was like Hagane. I couldn't even remember the full list, but it's Hagane. What's the guy's name?
This was a prefecture list.
Prefecture list. A prefecture order for battle list. Basically revolving around Hagane, getting her as many activations as possible. For her to Banzai up the board.
So as I just to quickly kind of summarize, because it is quite complicated how everything interacts, right?
It's about generating
loads of pass tokens and then
And then he took, is it battle plans or something like that on one of them that gives you extra pass tokens anyway. And then he gets, is it sudden alacrity or something like that?
Sudden alacrity.
Alacrity, that's the one. So you can turn five pass tokens into a into another activation. He had, is it Katsumoto, is it?
Yeah,
Katsumoto, the one we've ordered. It was a well thought out, well planned, you know, as he described it, it was a well-oiled killing machine, and literally if it goes well, it goes well. I mean, there was an element of the big my part, which I alluded to in the beginning, was I didn't put death sentence on Hagane. So she was fully keyed up, didn't have to spend any key to remove a death sentence, which would maybe help. But in my head now, just thinking about it, I wouldn't have probably stopped it. It would have just been turn two and not turn one. And this was one where it was the only game where my big shark wasn't in flank because it was nominated Vim. And he'd nominated my big shark to be a Vim. I nominated his dog handler because it was like the cheapest. It looked like on paper the cheapest, easiest model to kill with a shark.
Right.
But yeah, it's.
Oh dear. He really knew what he was doing, didn't he?
Yeah, 100%. You know, fair play to him. Like, if we look at his stats, he won in January. He'd won 3 out of his 4 games in January, 3-0, and he drew 0-0 with me playing with Ninjas. And then this event, he won all 4 of his games, 3-0. That goes
Let's just pause a sec. So you went into game 4, and you were whereabouts in the table?
Second, I think. Second or third.
Second. So you knew at that point that if you won that game, then you probably won the tournament.
Potentially won the tournament big enough, right? Yeah. As long as I beat him one, or I think I had to beat him like 2-0 or something like that to do it.
So it was in your hands, but you were basically you could see the list. And did you know the list in advance, or at least understand it, or was it a real surprise?
Once I'd spoken to a few people, I didn't know how effective it was at getting that many activations out and how far Hagane could cover the board. So turn one, when 8 of my 9 models were exhausted, he still had like 7 activations on the board. Yeah. And I started with like more models than him on the board, which is like, it just really confused. Like, I play with Ninja.
It's a huge swing, isn't it? And the whole dynamic and the paradigm of how it's working. Yeah.
And Hagane literally turn one managed to kill the big shark, jobbing, and do a lot of damage into like, and take one of the first damage off a water cami. She killed like 2 models, turn one. It was just absolutely nuts. I'd never seen a missile.
The closest I've seen to that is the Akari machine, just to plug, you know, another Bushido Cast product. Yeah, from Bushido Cast Industries. You can look at the YouTube video up.
Yeah.
Craig and I. What was it? I played into your Buto, didn't I?
Yeah, I think so,
With Master Akusa basically channeling stuff around to generate as many activations as possible for Akari,
yeah,
who could then just run off and, you know, either strip activations or
yeah, whatever. Yeah, but the problem is Hagane wasn't stripping activations, she was stripping models.
Yeah, which Hikari doesn't do. Hikari is largely defensive,
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things. And what really annoyed me most about this game, it's the one thing that really irritates me the most. I was rolling sixes on the tactical test, but he was tactician three and equal in my six. So because he was rolling more dice, he was just going first. You know, it's like the only time like I get the perfect rolls of tactical rolls, and I just couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah,
I'll be honest with you, I don't think we didn't see out the full game. I think by turn four, I had a water cami and maybe a crab left or something like that, and I was just
So to sum up, you lost that game 3-0.
I lost that one 3-0. Yeah, lost that one 3-0.
And I think at this point we can reveal you finished in what position?
Fourth in the end. It
fourth
really hampered me.
Place.
Yeah.
With a
congratulations
faction that you've never used before. You didn't even write the list or paint the models, frankly, did you? Really?
I did tweak your list.
You made it his own.
Ooh, I'm poking at you with a cutlass, Captain Jack.
I dropped the sapping seal and took an extra water. And I dropped the blow man down.
And we made all the right choices. This was why, and I refer back. See, it's a callback to the website. The tournament tracking site.
Oh, Longshanks. Yeah, Longshanks.
There we go. See, none of you could remember. Right, that was enough of a clue. What's the thing? So, I was, as you were doing well in the tournament, it was like, oh my god, he's using my models and like a list that I probably would have taken, like something like that, had I gone to the tournament. So to see it doing well and in real time on Longshanks to see you finish fourth, I was basking in the reflective glory.
That was me.
Captain Jack's success. I was like, that was my win.
No, it was quite a good list to get me started, to be honest, and I really enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I said, I've been out and bought most of mine. I think I've got one Kohanin to buy, and then I've got that list, and I'm intrigued to play it more and see how I can, if I can develop it, change it, or if I can just refine playing with it, because it was really good.
It's a fun list to use as well, right? That's
100%. And it was just fun for different reasons. It was fun just for like you said, having the chaff killing things and just being really annoying. Like everybody commented on how annoying, they forgot how annoying water cami were because they'd not really played into it for a while, and having two of them on the board was just really irritating.
That's what we're trying to do, isn't it? Just irritate people.
But it was irritating, but not. Sorry. It was irritating, but not to the point of
negative player experience.
Yeah, it was irritating because it was like, oh yeah, you know, it's this, but it wasn't stupidly negative like the Hagane.
It's not going to be because you're fielding these massive sharks that are just, you know, they're sort of gimmick fun models.
Yeah,
that you know they've got significant drawbacks.
They have.
It's not the most efficient
as I said. They make your opponent think, especially when they're flanking, they have to worry about them. They can't just ignore them, because if they do ignore them, they are going to do a lot of damage. And I know you joked about like trying to get as many activations out of the big shark as possible, but I could genuinely get three activations a turn just for himself, because he could charge himself, do some damage, generate another activation. If he's killed a model, he's then going into somebody else. Doing more damage.
Were you playing, remind me, this is a, you know, a bit of a brain fart moment, that if you've got enough key, so if he's maxed out on key, as long as he does 1 point of damage in one combat, then he can buy as many activations as he wants, or is it can he only buy one activation per?
He can only buy extra activations on a charge.
Yeah. Okay. So when he charges in, when he's eligible,
So if he does like four damage and he has four key, could he buy four activations?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't play it like that.
I think he can, and that's how I played it last time I played it. which is great because, yeah, you only need to hit once and then all of a sudden he's like, he's super, super Cyan sharp. Like, especially if he comes in on a later turn and he's maxed out.
Makes it even better.
I thought that's how it played, actually. And I thought, Gav, you would have prepped him, Jack, for that.
No, he did say, I was a bit confused. I thought it was because of like, the Banzai stuff. So I thought he meant that he charged something for one, did some damage, got another activation, then Banzai'd into something else with bleed, got another damage. Do you know, I just kept thinking, I didn't realise he meant that you spent four keys to do it like that.
Yeah, I think you got eight also ridiculous activations on that one point.
I did. Well, this is the last game I played. I got him up to like eight. It was a massive alpha strike. Got up to eight activations and was ready to go ham on Craigslist. And you charged him with, what was it?
Lone Swordsman.
a Lone Swordsman, and just killed him in one go. So I think I only had a couple of wounds left, but it was one of those combats where you rolled slightly better than me. And you just pipped it like one wound. And if the
it
dice
was,
had been
it
one
was a fear away, test, that was a dicey bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm a one key model, it. You're fear five, and it was just like, so, yeah.
Craig is just around to frustrate the hell out of me. You know, imagine having eight activations with an almost exhausted opponent with Hitokuchi to just go around munching stuff, and I didn't get to play. Didn't get to do it.
But I didn't know that you could do that. That would have been really cool to do.
I mean, there's going to be egg on my face if this podcast goes out and I'm wrong.
Yeah,
well, I'm prepared to take that chance. Just you know, to
I mean, that's certainly my understanding.
I've spread a lot of joy to a lot of people, haven't I?
Yeah, when you read it back, it doesn't actually say like one activation. It just says for each. What does it actually say? Let's just read it.
I think once you've met the requirements, you can trigger it and you just spam it at that point. If you've got the key, you can pay for it. So
yeah. there's no limit.
Probably actually make me see why you took Year of the Rising Sun, because
yes.
One of the things I think I said to you afterwards, I don't think I would have taken it again because I didn't feel like I needed it. With the way that I was flanking, he always had enough key to come in and buy his second wind. Mm-hmm. Arta was coming on turn three, so he'd be maxed out on key anyway.
So on balance, I was bringing both sharks on turn two because I hadn't thought about it in enough depth to think about the stagger. So that's useful, you know, experience for me to pick up on. But yeah, Year of the Risen Sun absolutely was in there to pump Hitokuchi with more key to buy more activations on the Alpha Strike.
Yeah. I just found that sometimes it wasn't hindering me. It was always good to have extra key, and it meant that Sho could do his sweep earlier on and things like that, which was really helpful. So yeah, it was it definitely had its benefits, but I don't know if its benefits outweigh, because it did allow a lot of models to get rid of Death Sentence quite quickly. And
it depends on the matchup. And I think in my list I didn't have Bounty, so that would have been
and that's where the way it works. But I mean, it was really good. I mean, it was one of those things that, and the Death Sentence thing, which is the big thing that I think people didn't realise, there's a couple of little rules mistakes throughout the day, like with targeting, and Death Sentence, one that I didn't even realise before the event until I got into it, was you can only clear it in the start phase. So you'd be halfway through a turn and they'd be like, right, I'm just going to spend three key to clear his Death Sentence. And you're like, I don't want to feel like this is a gotcha, but you can't. I think it would allow that Death Sentence to be on that little bit longer. I mean, they would have probably had the key at that point, but it means then they're going into turn two with like one. If they're a two key model, they're going into turn two with one key rather than two.
We're going off into the weeds.
Yeah, we are.
We might want to edit that a bit, but
it's why Waku can put out Death Sentence during a turn. They can't clear it, so
interesting. Yeah. No, it's good to know.
Waku. Oh, Craig's made a mess of me with Waku before. Oof. Less said about that, the better. That's for another podcast.
Now we're going on a tangent.
On to the main event then. So this is Craig. So going into game four, what's your position?
I don't know what my position was, but it must have been, I think by that point, I was the table next to Jack, and I was pretty sure Heath was what, like, position one and two, so we were probably three or four. So
yeah, I think who you were playing also won all three of his games.
Yeah,
I don't know what his scores were, but I think he'd at that point he'd won all three because I think I could have drawn either your opponent.
There were a lot of different, and this was what was so exciting again about Longshanks was that you could see the results being coming in as the game's finished. So, you were watching and calculating, how many players are left that can still leapfrog Craig and what do they need to score? It's just such a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
So, Craig, you knew that you could potentially win the tournament with, like, a big win.
Yeah.
Depending on what happened on other tables. But it was within your grasp, right?
I was kind of surprised, if I'm completely honest, that I was there, but I did have that good win. I was playing into Kinchi Temple again, and the mission was Muzukashi.
Muzukashi?
Yeah. So one of the more complicated scenarios. And it was, again, thankfully, I have a fairly decent understanding of that faction and felt a lot more confident having done well against them, because that was the first time I played against them with Shiho earlier in the day. So I had at least that behind me, give me a bit of confidence. But it was a very good opposition, great player, really nice guy, and thankfully it was a very relaxed game. And
it sounds like you're reading through a checklist. It was a great player and a nice guy, and but that's not the case. It's like, genuinely, all of your
I'm just thinking through my thoughts. And absolutely. You'd perhaps think it would be a bit stressful, but it really wasn't, which I was grateful for, because it was a long day.
To both of you, yeah.
It was a long day, and
it was a long day.
Yeah,
and I mean, is Craig and his opponent? You're saying it wasn't stressful, like for you or for you?
I can't speak for them, but I think it was fairly relaxed. As it, what it can be like at top tables at tournaments, and get a little bit tense, but it wasn't at all like that. And that's kind of what I'm looking for these days. They'll have a bit of fun.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Jack, because you had the same experience, right? Like,
yeah, it was nice, relaxed day, but then I don't know if that's because I was playing with no pressure. The only pressure I felt was in the last round, but there was generally throughout the whole day, it was no pressure for me. So, it was really bad. And the opponents were great. I think Craig mentioned everybody there was really nice. And it was really good to see the range of opponents. We had people coming from Europe. We had quite a few that come from Europe. It was just a really good atmosphere and well run.
It's probably because I wasn't there to wind people up.
Yeah, should say it was well run and
I think there was a double cow list there, so I think you'd have been on par.
I was there in spirit. So anyway, so Craig, your game. Were there any sort of main highlights?
Yeah, I mean,
like swings or anything like that.
I think Hiroto did his thing and came on and killed Q quite early. I guess one of the things throughout the day, a few of my oppositions did say they hadn't really played against proper sort of Shiho proper much, and so kind of weren't really aware of everything they could do, it seems. So I think there were, they do have a lot of tricks and a pretty good toolbox. So I think that kind of helped me, because I was fairly familiar with what I was playing against, and so I had a bit of an advantage there.
I asked you about practice games earlier, and we didn't mention that. I played into your list a couple of times as you were refining it. So it was about three different versions, I think, two or three different versions of Shiho list.
Yeah.
And every time I was, it wasn't gotchas, but I very much lost the game just because I didn't really know what I was playing against. And, if that's a huge advantage going into a tournament.
It's a bit of
And you'd practiced and refined, and you know exactly what you're doing and against the opponent's list, because you've probably played most of them, and people wouldn't know
really what to defend it, though. There's not really a proper way to defend the Shiho turn to everybody flanks, because you've only got one activation. Even like if you've won the tactical role, you've only still got one activation to try and protect the rear arc of like four or five models.
they're just so effective at causing that dilemma. And if you don't know how to get out of it,
yeah, putting multiple threats down is pretty key.
So that's a great insight for those, you know, aspiring Shiho players. Like that's what makes the list powerful, right?
It's multiple threats at one time. That means you're not so dependent on the luck. I mean, you can get tactician, but even then, it's not a guarantee, and the opposition could have it as well. So I think getting to the point where you can set up multiple attack runs and put the opposition in a bad situation where they have to make a decision on, okay, which model am I going to lose? That's kind of what it boils down to. So I think being off meta and all the rest of it kind of probably helped throughout the day, and I think it helped in this game. I kind of knew which models that I wanted to try to kill first. So generally it's Q, then it's the monk with the laser eyes, and then just don't attack the husk unless it's the one that you're allowed, you don't mind dealing with. But the one that turns into Kodai, just don't go for him. So it's all that. So I kind of played it by the book and focused on the mission. I turned a lot of the idols, actually. I normally don't go that aggressive, but because I was able to take out a fair few of the monks, I was just able to kind of like turn, I ended up turning two or three of them in the end. So it was quite aggressive, really, and just leaving one to do some prayers on. So the game went surprisingly well. I think it easily could have gone either way. I think if the
don't tell us the final result yet. Just wait.
Okay.
But yeah.
I about to say
I just want to, you know, just leave the suspense for I just wanted to ask the question.
Yeah, I think Kinchi, if they get going, they're pretty unstoppable, but they take a while to get going. As soon as they hit rank one, you know you it's a massive jump up in power as they can start to boost and they can use some very good key feats. If they manage to get all the way to rank three, then with a fair number of models, then it's pretty much game that I would imagine.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew that I had a window of opportunity to get in there, and thankfully my dice were quite good. I think I had a bit of luck, if I'm honest. And came through.
In terms of the meta.
Yeah.
In a four-game tournament, you played into Kinchi twice. So what was the percentage sort of representation of Kinchi? Was it just a fluke that you...
I think it was fluke. I think there's only four in the end.
Three. I've got the stats out here.
32. So they weren't overrepresented. You just had a bit of a fluky kind of...
Yeah, looking at it here... Every faction was represented. Yure just won, and
come third, did it not?
Anyway, Ito came third.
Jack, did you duplicate factions that you played into?
No,
or was it four?
No, so I had Shiho, Minamoto, Temple, and Prefecture.
That's right.
Very, very.
Yeah. I gave my list for Kinchi and didn't draw Kinchi at all.
Anyway, so right now, I think it is time. I just wanted to clarify that kind of point. So, Craig, the result of your game was and your final standing in the tournament, please.
Yeah. So that game went my way, went very well. So I ended up somehow getting a 3-0 win. Genuinely surprised me at the time, and I'm still surprised now.
Yeah, congratulations.
And somehow came second, which...
Shiho represents! Yeah.
Which is
amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really nice to do. Yeah, it's
what
great.
Do you think were the biggest things that you learned about Shiho along the way then?
They don't need changing.
No, they do. They need nerfing. Jeez, it's great to win a tournament with Shiho.
I didn't win, but you know, it felt like in my head it was a win. But yeah, I think it kind of, for me actually, I love the way it ended in a way, because kind of the Shiho kind of basically didn't have to, they avoided the fight with the prefecture, sent their Jung allies to take the brunt, and then they kind of submarined it at the end.
I'd done really well in scoring, and then just a 3-0 loss just completely dropped me three places.
But it was good to be there, and sort of, it was nice to be able to look across the table and see Jack doing well as well. Kind of like, you know, because we'd had a few practice games and everything, and I think we both were taking kind of wild card options, and we weren't really sure how it was going to go.
I was going to make the opposite point, that it was like, it was very much like a training montage like thing in a Rocky movie, right? So Craig had played a good number of games with his list. He was doing the montage.
I think it's
getting the work in, getting the practice, learning, experiencing. Jack, you know, just turned up, young whippersnapper, none of the training. his raw talent took him a long way, but ultimately, you know, it's the training montage that's over the edge, yeah?
those extra games, yeah. I think what helped is preparation. When we had some practice games, and I asked everyone just to bring out their most competitive list, and I knew that was going to be pretty tough, but getting people to play with what they would take to a Grandmasters is obviously what you kind of need to be prepared for. And I hadn't actually had a game against Kinchi or anything like that. I think there's just a general practice and everything kind of just helped on the day.
Used them, right? You understood how they worked because you played as them.
Yeah, that certainly helped. And like the dissension list I played against, I had practice games against a Bazembo build, so I had some form there. And against ninjas, I was lucky enough to play against Jack, so I had, you know, a couple of games against ninjas, and that really helped kind of just my understanding of like how do I kind of make the most of things like Hiroto's move and stuff to get through camouflage and some little kind of technical things that can make a big difference in the game. I was really, really pleased, and I just thoroughly enjoyed playing Shiho, to be honest. I think that was what I was kind of that's what I was really looking for. And like I said, I got quite a few practice games in, but it was more because I enjoyed playing with Shiho, and then I was kind of constantly surprised that I kept winning with them. And then I thought, you know, why not take them to the Grandmasters? And if they can do it, but it's still a bit of a leap of faith, it felt, because you just don't see them being played that often.
I mean, you were surprised that you were winning with them, but you were mostly playing against me, so I'm not sure how that... I call shenanigans on that. The great thing about this is you guys both took lists that are kind of would generally be considered in the meta to be sort of slightly, C, D tier, maybe. Yeah.
I don't think you
place second and fourth with those by either putting in a lot of you know, diligence and practice, or just being so cavalier that it doesn't matter.
Well, like I said, the whole thing for me that whole day, I felt no pressure at all. I think, like, if I was playing my ninjas, and I think I said it on the day, like, I came fourth in January with my ninjas, and I'd put in like months and months of prep with the ninjas. And it was a hard day. It was a hard slog in January. Whereas in the Games Expo, I could have played another two games. I felt really, you know, I was enjoying the games with them. There was no pressure at all.
Do you know why that was, Jack? Yeah, because you didn't have to put all of the work in beforehand, you know, writing the list, painting the models. You had all these sweets, like these free sweets to fuel you throughout the day.
Good. When
I was packing that stuff up, do you know what it felt like? I felt like I was packing lunch for my kids to go on a school trip. I was like, oh, I'm just packing little Jack off to his first tournament. I put it in a really useful box, did I? It was all nice.
Yeah, it was really good. It had everything in it. It was perfect. It was so... I can't thank you enough. It was really good. I really appreciated that. It was a good insight. You know, it was nice to play with nicely painted models because mine aren't normally that nice.
You know, I think we should do, you know, it's quite a small community. We should do more of that kind of stuff, because it's like, yeah. I got so much out of it just being more invested in an event that I wasn't attending.
You know? Attending, yeah. No,
I
it was really
recommend, you know, go into the trouble if you have somebody that would, you know, appreciate it.
Yeah, if somebody's happy to just take the leap of faith and play something different, you know, I would definitely say recommend it, enjoy it, you know, especially if you're I don't want to say that I wasn't enjoying Bushido into the lead up of the Masters, but I was doing other things with the game. Mm-hmm. Like I've mentioned, like playtesting and other bits like that. And I wasn't looking at the games as a different, like from that perspective, I wasn't just having fun with them. I was thinking about things about, oh, actually, is this working or is this broken or is this good? Is this negative? So my actual casual gaming and stuff like that was really like
subverted by an analytical mindset.
Yes.
You might say.
Yes. And I'm not really an analytical person. I'm not that sort of, you know, I wouldn't class myself as one of these raw players that look at everything in raw and how, you know, I'm very much a player of intent.
Instinct,
you know,
yeah.
It's I'm very much
instinct, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not as strict with something, you know, a couple of my opponents made, you know, misplays and I'm like, no, that's fine. Just take a bow. I know you didn't want to do that. Or, you know, they say like, oh, my intent was to be here. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. You know, I'm quite casual and relaxed in that sense. So yeah, just to go over a list where I didn't have to think about anything else, but just enjoy hitting things and trying to score. It was just really relaxing. There was no pressure because I'd have felt
biting things, surely, not hitting things.
Biting, yeah.
Yeah, you were a bit bitey that weekend, weren't you? You know, we need someone to come and take care of you because you were just getting a little bit bitey. Anyway, right. I think we've kind of run out of time. That's a brilliant insight into the tournament experience and those lists that you took. And so I'm sure this will be posted in the Discord, the link to this.
Brilliant.
So, you know, if any listeners want to hear, understand more about Craig's Shiho and how he piloted them, you know, a bit more detail about the list, he'll be more than happy to engage. If you ask questions in the Discord, same applies to Jack, I'm sure. If you want to hear more,
I'll tell you what I think I know. I'm not an experienced judge. It was about my list. I've probably got an idea.
It's all with caveats, right?
Yeah.
That's how I sent you away. It's like, oh, yeah, I think it'll work. But I don't know.
Yeah, you must be a little bit relieved, Gav.
Oh, God, Jack, yeah. My reputation is on the line there.
It was like, thanks for that. It's like, they look lovely.
What's the win-win? If I got absolutely trounced on four games, lost all four games, oh, it's Gav's fault, Gav's list.
Yeah.
My job is, I'm a project manager, so that's my lot in life. If everything works swimmingly, then nobody notices and I get no credit. If it all collapses, then it's all my fault.
It's all on your head. No. It was a good starting point. It's really made me look at Jung in a different way. So, yeah, it was really good in that
respect. Maybe because this could be a little side hustle, though, Gav, where you just write lists for people to take the tournament.
Sell lists.
Yeah.
I did actually think, you know, it crossed my mind for a fleeting moment, right, when I was packing up that little box. I was like, how much time would it take me to just, like, make 10 of these? Like, okay, you know. And have a little website. You could put and just have everything paint, every model for every faction painted, and people could just write a list and hire it for the weekend, and just have a little stack. You know,
would be nice. Might work. It would be very good. I'd probably use it, to be honest, for my own factions as well.
I haven't got space to store it. Otherwise, I'd do that. But yeah, if you'd be interested, hit me up. Yeah, I'm happy to you know, perform the Jack thing again for other members of the Bushido community. Anyway,
you never know. When I go to a tournament, maybe I'll have to do this, take the pressure off, write my own list. You can just come up with something. Yep.
I'll send you out with your lunchbox, Darren. And you're going to make daddy proud. Yeah. Right. Guys, everyone, Darren's been a little bit kind of dropping in and out because of connections. That's why he hasn't been particularly vocal, and I've had to steer the whole conversation because he's just not done his job. But thank you for all of your contributions.
Thank you for having me on again. It was really, really good.
Yeah, wonderful. So this is it from Bushido Cast, signing out, and we'll see you next time.